morning. Time for another episode of Quest Community Vibrations, better known as Quest Youth Radio, which is the best youth radio. This morning, student host Walter Pierce features three segments on today's program, starting with Rebecca Lee Crumpter for his diamond, the word insurance for his definition, and for curtains, a musical artist and what they've done behind the curtain to the stage, Miss Lauren Hill. Of course, Mr. Harris, our music director, will feature a segment, Curtains, musically that is, on Branford Marsalis. And finally, myself, Mr. Bay, is going to speak about healthcare disparities amongst African Americans. Thank you for joining us and becoming a part. And don't you go anywhere. Keep it locked.
The night while I'm coasting around Kelly Drive, taking a scenic route over to the west side, I see this little streak light flicker in the sky. Since the stars are radiating bright, I'm paying it no mind. Never once considered no sign of any kind. Extend my arm, turn the car stereo to nine. Head gorgeous by Silk 130 on auto rewind. About the third time it played, heard your beat sound, thought it was a part of the fade. Slightly phased, I pull over to investigate. Beat turn into a speech, making my ears ache. And the ground vibrate, and my body levitate. In the hypnotical state, in the direction I face, hesitate, too late, fell for the bait, best bet, play safe, cooperate, whether in over my head or whatever the case, by chance, by fate, God wanted it for me, no mistakes, transcend physical, elevate, time won't wait, move on, face, explore, by chance, by faith, God wanted it for me, no mistakes, transcend physical, elevate, time won't wait, move on, face, explore.
Okay. So I'm like floating along, tranquil feeling, sorta like I'm huffing the bone. Then I hear a voice telling me, relax, stay calm. Suddenly I'm conscious, saying the 23rd Psalm. Human-like figure approaching with open arms. Bad pole, naked knife, joint, glowy palms. Tentile grill, not intimidating at all. Medium built, height about 5'10", brown skin. Looking like an African, suiting knees or something. Couldn't believe I wasn't petrified, feeling like I had to pee or nothing. So I was lower to the ground so my feet could touch it.
By chance, by faith, God wanted it for me, no mistakes, transcend physical, elevate, time won't wait, move on, face, explore, by chance, by faith, God wanted it for me, no mistakes, transcend physical, elevate, time won't wait, move on, face,
now eye to eye, with this like alien guy, by chance or fate, this place and time, could it be coincidental that I passed a line, he replied, no, like he could read my mind, believe that I'm pleased to find, you're the second specimen, I done seen of your kind, analyzed in, I must admit you're some fine advertisement, for earthlings who keep their inner light shining, you got an aura that glows like a diamond, to penetrate every realm that I dwelt in, cause of your passion and life for excelling, you will to yourself the situation that you fell in,
by chance, by me. God wanted it for me, no mistakes, transcend physical, elevate, time won't wait, move on, faith, explore, by chance, by faith, God wanted it for me, no mistakes, transcend physical, elevate, time won't wait, move on, faith, explore, by chance, by faith, God wanted it for me, no mistakes, transcend physical, elevate, time won't wait, move on, faith, explore, by chance, by faith, God wanted it for me, no.
Music, like poetry, has a method, and history, like a diamond, shines clear to the truth. You see, words have meanings that we can comprehend, like definitions. News can show us a chain of events that we may not always understand. Now, I'm asking you as the audience to pull back our musical curtain and see and hear the contributions of our diaspora, and you are sure to find our Quest moment, where we attempt to make waves, in fact, vibrations, on this quest, this journey this morning. And so I say to you, thank you very much again for joining us to hear a different perspective from our community. Without any further ado, I'd like to introduce our student host to take it away.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations. We're live on 89.5 from the campus of Seton Hall in South Orange. And to start off the show, I want to start off with a diamond. And see, history is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply, and you are bound to find yourself. Now, my diamond for today, her name is Rebecca Lee Crumpler. And see, Rebecca Lee Crumpler challenges the prejudice that prevented African Americans from pursuing careers in medicine to become the first African American woman in the United States to earn a MD degree or a doctorate in medicine, a distinction formerly credited to Rebecca Cole. Although little has survived to tell the story of Crumpler's life, she has secured her place in the historical record with her book of medical advice for women and children. Crumpler was born in 1831 in Delaware to Absalom Davis and Matilda Weber, an aunt in Pennsylvania who spent much of her time caring for sick neighbors, and she may have influenced her career choice. By 1852, she had moved to Charleston, Massachusetts, where she worked as a nurse for the next 8 years. She was able to perform such work without any formal training. And in 1860, she was admitted to the New England Female Medical College. When she graduated in 1864, Crumpler was the first African American woman in the United States to earn an MD degree and the only African American woman to graduate from the New England Female Medical College, which closed in 1873. In her book of medical discourses, published in 1883, she gives a brief summary of her career path. It may be well to state here that, having been reared by a kind aunt in Pennsylvania, whose usefulness with the sick was continually sought, I early conceived a liking for and sought every opportunity to relieve the sufferings of others. Later in life, I devoted my time, when best I could, to nursing as a business, serving under different doctors for a period of 8 years, from 1852 to 1860. Most of the time at my adopted home in Charleston, Middlesex County, Massachusetts, from these doctors, I received letters commending me to the facility of the New England Female Medical College, whence, 4 years afterwards, I received the degree of doctoress of medicine for a short while before moving to Richmond, Virginia. After the Civil War ended in 1865, Richmond, she felt, would be a proper field for real missionary work, and one that would present ample opportunities to become acquainted with the diseases of women and children. She says, during my stay, there's nearly every hour was improved in that sphere of labor. The last quarter of the year, 1866, I was enabled to have access each day very large number of indigent and other of different classes and a population of over 3,000 colored. She joined other black physicians caring for freed slaves who would otherwise have had no access to medical care. Working with the Freedmen's Bureau and missionary and community groups, Even though black physicians experienced intense racism working in the post-war South, no photos or other images survived of Dr. Crumpler. The little we knew about her comes the introduction to her book. A remarkable mark of her achievements as a physician and medical writer in a time when very few African Americans were able to gain access to medical college, let alone publish. Her book is one of the very first medical publications by an African American. And that concludes my segment on Rebecca Lee Crumpler. As you can see here, she doesn't have a lot of information on her, but you know, she's very prominent and important because she is a pioneer in her field, being the first African American woman to earn a doctorate in medicine, which is something that should definitely be acknowledged. It's sad that we don't have a lot on her, but the information we were able to gather, it was obvious that she wanted to help her people out so that we could have access to medical necessities that we needed to survive. Because without her and without people like her, we would not be able to have access to medical supplies and medical care that we needed. So, again, I want to thank her for that. And that concludes my segment again on Rebecca Lee Crumpler. You are listening to 89.5 WSOU, and this is student host Walter Pierce. Thank you.
Yes, sir. See, what we're about to do right now is pay tribute to a living legend. So I brought Naturally 7 with me to do the beat, and I brought DCP's own Rudy Current. And me, I go by the name of Ludacris, right? And it's a lot of people out there claiming that they bosses, but I'm here to let you know the true boss is back. Let's go!
Rebirth, the true soul, black and nostra. He's back on the line. The true soul boss is over. Better respect your roots. I hope you're taking notice. Because he's the dude coming back in motion.
Keep a flock of PYTs with them. Yeah. And they all exotic, erotic, come in groups of threes with them. Yeah. Pivot all over the world, and I really get it hot when I'm overseas with them. Hey. And when we in Bel Air at the castle, I shoot the breeze with them. Woo. Publishing checks is coming even when he stay in bed. So we eating at the master table, and we breaking bread. New artist steady bossing up, but I tell them why I bother. They can't come close to Ludacris and his godfather. That's Quincy Jones, baby.
Hey. He's back on the line. The true soul boss is over. Better respect your roots. I hope you're taking notice. Because he's the true coming back in motion.
Now they're looting them, let me through. I'm here to bridge the gap between the old and new. Said I'm a Casanova, Quincy, but put that, and I'ma put that. Same face, me mugging them, hugging the track like, ooh. I'ma make it do what it do, yeah.
He's back on the line. The true soul boss is over.
Many times I love that song, Ludacris, Quincy Jones, and Take Six. Right now, we want to turn it back over to our student host, Mr. Walter Pierce. Good morning, Walter.
Good morning. Thank you for that. And we're 20 minutes into our show, and it's time to go into definitions. And this segment provides listener with words and their meanings so that we can achieve together a common basis to say we care and we believe in ourselves. Remember, whosoever controls our definitions controls us. We must define existence and not have it defined for us. And the definition I'm going to be talking about today is insurance, but more specifically, health insurance. And health insurance is an insurance that covers the whole or a part of the risk of a person incurring medical expenses, spreading the risk over numerous persons. And see, you're probably wondering why I will pick health insurance for my definition today. And the reason is because health insurance, especially for our community and our people, is something that is very important that some people don't even have once they reach that age of eligibility to get it for themselves. And especially due to, you know, the discrimination and the health disparities that minorities face in the field, in, you know, going to get checkups, going to the hospital, things like that. You know, not having health insurance could put your life at risk, and especially financially as well, because if you don't have the insurance, you know, you're going to have to pay out of pocket, and it is very expensive for going, you know, to hospitals and going to get checkups and things like that. That could really put, that could put a financial dent on you, and, you know, especially for us and our people, that's not what we want. And we need to understand the importance of having health insurance for our communities and making sure that it is available for our people. And especially, a lot of people don't even have access and are not able to obtain it because of their financial status and who they are, which I believe should be some form of health insurance should be available to all people. And, you know, and that's why we see a lot of people dying out here, and you see a lot of people struggling because they don't have access to this health insurance. And it's very depressing to see. And, you know, especially going back to the health disparities, you know, we at our, you know, we at higher risk for high blood pressure, diabetes, a stroke, that it's on Pfizer.com, you know, that's what they explain, that we have higher risk of those incidents and those health issues. So I want to also bring the question to you, Mr. Bay, and if anybody else wants to answer, do you believe that health insurance should be available in some form to all people in America?
Hello?
Okay. I'm glad you
Hello?
Asked that question. I have Tamir Davis, a black librarian, on the line. And so I'm going to toss that question to you. Is health care insurance important in the African-American diaspora?
Health care, and it's very important that you made mention of the terminology, the diaspora. If you look at the African diaspora, there are some countries that have socialized health care whereby everybody has equal access to health care. In fact, for example, in the country of Cuba, there was a program whereby African Americans were able to get their medical degree at no cost at all. Go down there, and as we know, some of the best doctors that are produced are out of that region of Cuba. They actually share their doctors all over the world, and they helped out with a lot of different pandemics and other different type of situations. And then if we're looking at healthcare from a dietary perspective, there's a lot of great doctors that wrote several books. If you read Leela Africa's book, African Holistic Health, if you read and listen to Dr. Sabi, he has a lot of different alternatives to different aspects of, issues dealing with acidity in the body, alkaline issues, what have you. African Holistic Health by Leela Africa is a great book to read. Nutricide is another great book to read by Dr. Leela Africa. The reality is one of the main things that's actually not just dealing with African Americans. If you look at the country as a whole, if, for example, one issue that's a major issue is fatty liver, due to the fact that there's a lot of people eating fast food diets that is not healthy. At one point, that wasn't an issue. I think fast foods became very popular during the 50s and 60s and still to today. But there were a lot of people who were able to cook their foods and get the additional natural nutrients to help their body maintain its health. A lot of people have high cholesterol, not just due to stress, but also due to the type of diet that they're eating. We have to be very careful about the fast food reality that we're living in. And it leads to more illnesses. Watch our diet. There's great doctors that are around that's been assisting many people with illnesses of cancer, melanoma cancer, different types of cancers, and they've been assisting due to using natural herbs and also engaging in a constructive program in terms of their diet. So I think diet is very important, and we have to be very mindful and watchful of what we're eating and how we're eating this type of food. And I think that home cooked meals, in my opinion, are the best. That's the start. I think one of the major things that we have to start with is a diet. But I do agree that everybody needs health care. But I also agree that health care in some degree needs to be socialized and shared so that everybody has equal access to their health care, making sure that everybody can create a better sense of sustainable living for themselves and what have you.
Okay. Tanisha, you fit in where you get in, and you're getting in right now. You have children, and I'm asking you, Tanisha, good morning. What do you think about Walter's question as it pertains to the importance of health care?
Healthcare is very important, I guess, especially when it comes to us. It's different, levels to insurance and what they cover and what they won't cover. And I think that is a disparity. I don't think it is a disparity, I would say, because you don't get this certain type of care that you would get if you had better insurance or better doctors. And I think that's very it's very sad. But at the same time, like you said, we have to start educating ourselves and educating our children to be in those fields. So when the insurance lack, we have other means, you know, of survival and other means, other tactics that we could heal ourselves. And especially when it comes to our food grade, the reason why we have so many obese people in America is because of the GMOs. GMO is genetically modified organisms. And sometimes when you look at the food labels, like high fructose corn syrup, that is genetically made. Or sometimes when you look at your cereal boxes, it would say partially genetically modified organisms. So these are things that we need to pay attention to. And these are the reasons why we have so many different health disparities, because the chemicals they're putting in the food versus, like, in Europe, they fought against those preservatives in the food, and it's more healthier. And they actually have seeds within their vegetables, and it's not being grown in a laboratory, or their vegetables or fruits are grown in a laboratory. And that's what we have to be aware of how we get the nutrition to be able to heal our bodies and fight against these pollutants that attack us every day.
Okay. Mr. Harris, do you agree with, or do you, what do you think about health care insurance and the importance of it?
Yeah, well, I definitely agree with everything everybody else has said so far, but this is only an issue here in America. Most people in most countries and stuff that are what they call developed, they have universal health care. And if it's the insurance companies that want to make money, is the only reason why we are having this conversation in the first place. You know, because health care should be a right, not just a privilege for people who can afford it.
Okay. All right. I want to come back to Mr. Davis. Walter, you're not going to get away with just bringing up the word insurance and not have us to shed some light on the origination of insurance in America. Mr. Davis, I want you to sum it up real quickly, but tell us about the origins of insurance in America.
Well, if you think it in terms of origins of insurance in America, insurance was actually built, was a building block of the Queen, Queen of Portugal. They were engaged in slavocracy during this particular time. And say for example, everything.
Wait a minute. Say that word again.
Slavocracy. The economy of slavery. The economy of slavery. And so many of these countries that was engaged in slavery actually had to have insurance as a. And when you deal with the term insurance deals with arterial science. And or as brother the brother said earlier, risk management. So what you do is you calculate the numbers and the mathematics based on the risk. And so, say for example, with the large ships that were built, and people were engaged with building these ships due to a lot of money that was involved with the ship selling out. That had to be insured. The ships had to be insured. The bondsmen and bondswomen had to be insured. For example, in insurance, they have a term called key employee insurance, right? And so that with key employee insurance, a person that's a very viable asset to the job or to the industry is considered a key employee. So if that person, something happens to that person in terms of insurance, then there's something that kicks in whereby that person dies, then the company can benefit and use that money to hire somebody else in that same position. A lot of the bondsmen and bondswomen were insured. The slaves were insured by the slave master. And if once that slave had passed away, then that person would – the death benefit would go to the slaver. There's a lot of insurance companies, and I don't mean to care to mention any names, but there's a – hell of a lot of insurance companies that still exist today that built their industry based on slavery. A lot of the, for example, I could talk about it because it's now a defunct company. Lehman Brothers, which is a financial company, got their start building based on slavery. and the slaveocracy that existed here in this country. So a lot of the financial firms that we know about today that go as far back as 1840s or prior had got they made a major part of their monies come from came from slavery. So the start because slavery was the main industry of this country. I think Wilberforce back in 1885. I don't have my book in front of me. They had slots. They had abolished the slave trade out of Europe, but we were still engaged in slave trade here in this country. And it's been a major part of the economy, the cotton industry, the indigo industry, the all different aspects of industries that existed in this country had existed based on the reality of the slaveocracy of America. A lot of people think in terms of slaves just picking cotton. There were slaves that were mathematicians too, because a lot of the slaves that there was a lot of slaves that was engaged in linguistic type studies to be interpreters and so on and so forth, stuff like that. So the industry had expanded, and then a lot of people like diversified their portfolios based on slavery because they had enough money to do so. And two, the graduated wage of wages was so high in this country because of slavery, because we have to remember that there was no monies being paid to the slaves. So where did all that money go to? It went to the slave master. And there's several different books you can read about the subject matter. Black Law, Right Resistance by Mary Frances Berry and also John Blascam. You can read a book entitled They Were Her Property by Dr. Stephanie Jones Rogers. There's several different books to read about it. The Peculiar Institution goes into it in detail, talking about the slave community, so on and so forth. But we have to understand that the slaveocracy of America was an industry, and it was diverse. And so a lot of people who was engaged in that reality were able to take the amount of monies that they have actually amassed and diversify into different industries and what have you.
Okay. All right. So we're going to come back. Thank you very much for that summation. Walter, does that answer your question? I know you directed it towards me.
No, I directed it towards everybody to answer, and did not answer my question. It answered my question and gave a lot more. You know, I want to thank, I want to thank him for giving all of that information, because it is very important to know the origin of the word, because that's what the definition is. You need to find what the origin of it means and give an example of how it's prominent for us. So thank you.
Yeah, and then just to give you some – I'm sorry.
Go right ahead.
We look at it, right, when we begin to look at it, we when we look at finances, we kind of – because of the way it's taught, at one point, finance, politics and economics was taught as one school in Europe so that people can understand – and follow the money, and then also understand the different aspects of politics. It's separated now, and it's separated for a reason. But when we begin to look at industries, we have to be able to follow the money and the origins of the money. Like if somebody is doing an investigation on a rap company that exists, a lot of rap companies, and a lot of people condone this type of stuff, saying, well, we got our money, and we started from selling cocaine, for example. But how many people died from that? How many babies were born addicted to crack because of that? You see what I'm saying? So
yeah.
the same as it relates to slaveocracy. How many slaves died for that reality? How many babies were killed in the womb of a woman because of that reality? How many financial companies still benefit from this today? Because of that reality.
Okay. We're going to go to our music. The Sounds of Ella Fitzgerald. No Words is not the name of the song, but check it out.
Of all the boys I've known, and I've known some, until I first met you, I was lonesome. when you came in sight, dear, my heart grew light and this whole world seemed new to me. You're really swell, I have to admit you deserve expressions that really fit you. And so I racked my brain hoping to explain all the things that you do to me. By mere fist of shame, please let me explain. By mere fist of shame means that you're grand. By mere fist of shame, again I'll explain. It means you're the fairest in the land. I could say Bella, Bella, even say Wunderbar. Each language only helps me tell you how grand you are. I've tried to explain by mere bit of shame. So kiss me and say you understand.
The sounds of Ella Fitzgerald, definitely a diva in her time. And now it's time for us to flip the tape over and move on for our segment of curtains. And we're going to let Mr. Shelton Harris, our music director, begin.
Hi. Excuse me. Good morning, everybody. Curtains, as we see it, is an exposure and analysis of artists and their work. Behind the curtain and the stage. And recording artists and companies have grown rich from the support of the community, but what benefits has the community gained from the artists? Today we pull back the curtain on a musician who transcends musical genres. I'm talking about Branford Marsalis. saxophonist extraordinaire. A little background, he was born in August 1960 in Bowbridge, Louisiana, the eldest son of Dolores and Ellis Marcellus. He started playing the piano at the age of four and experimented some with clarinet and began playing the saxophone at 15. He really couldn't stand jazz until his late 60s, I mean his late teens. Instead, he preferred the sounds of 70s rock, funk, and disco. He was a fan of Led Zeppelin, Parliament Funkadelic, Donna Summers, Aretha Franklin, and Elton John. It may have been these diverse beginnings that gave Marcellus flexibility to later cross over and push the envelope of conventional jazz. In 1982, his brother Winton formed a quintet with Branford. At the time when few young musicians were actually playing hard bop, and because of that, the quartet revived the interest in the sound. Branford then switched from playing the alto sax, or to playing the alto sax. That's when comparisons to Lester Young, John Coltrane, Sonny Rollins, and Wayne Shorter started to begin. After being accused of copying these legend sounds, he got some advice from Herbie Hancock and Dizzy Gillespie, who told him that he was doing the right thing, because all great musicians start out by copying and imitating others, then go on to find their own sound. In 1994, Branford Marcellus formed his own quartet to little success. Unlike his brother, Branford was curious to look beyond pure jazz and wanted to explore other forms of music. He got that opportunity when rock musician Sting asked him to collaborate on his Bring the Night and later on Dream of the Blue Turtles. Sting was really impressed by Marcellus' literacy in jazz and his willingness not to be constricted by it. It's been said that Marcellus' contributions to Bring the Night was considered the most critical one on the album's Few Strengths. The saxophonist continued to work and tour with the rock star for the next 3 years. He stood out so much so that Tina Turner, Public Enemy, the Neville Brothers, the Grateful Dead, and many others began to call on Marcellus, who was fast becoming known as a pop star. He branched out in some further doing some acting roles in Throw Mama from the Train. He was in Spike Lee's School Days. He also wrote the score for Spike Lee's More Better Blues. He also started working as a soloist and composer on the soundtracks for Malcolm X, Clockers, Sneakers, Mr. and Mrs. Loving, Single Dead, Once in a Lifetime, and The Russia House. Now, but throughout his career, he has been blessed to be a member of many influential jazz bands. He was a member of Art Blakey's Jazz Messengers. You know, of course, he was with his brother Wynton Marcellus' quintet. He toured with Herbie Hancock. He recorded with Miles Davis. He formed his own quartet, releasing Scenes of the City, performed with other artists including Dizzy Gillespie, Tina Turner, Public Enemy, the Neville Brothers. Of course, he's toured with Sting. And also released classical music, Romances for Saxophone and the Royal Garden Blues, which he won Grammys for. He formed his own jazz group, releasing Trio Jeeps, The Beautiful Ones Were Not Born Yet, I've Heard You Twice the First Time. And in 1997, he formed Buckshot LaFunk and released Dark Keys and Musical Evolution. But even with his musical stuff that he was doing in front of the stage, he followed his father's footsteps. Marcellus took into jazz into the classroom. He taught at Michigan State University, first as a visiting scholar, then as a part-time faculty member. He also held a part-time position in San Francisco State University as a part of the faculty in the music. In 2002, he announced and launched an independent record company called Marcellus Music. He once said in a press release that artists who wanted to be musicians, not marketing creations, had very few places to record at the time. And this is what his music was all about, his music company was all about. From a very young age, and numerous powerful influence. Praying for Marcella's career has blossomed into one of the most powerful influences and making him one of the most powerful influences himself. I personally am particularly to his explorations outside of jazz. Here's an interpretation of another master, Maestro, if you please. We'll be right back.
next curtain segment with Walter Pierce. Take it away, Walter.
Yes, and again, welcome back, everybody, as we're coming to the end of our show. I want to go into my curtains for today, which is Lauryn Hill. And Lauryn Hill and high school classmate Praz formed together under the name Translator Crew and were joined shortly thereafter by Wyclef Jean. As a teenager, Hill also acted on the television soap opera As the World Turns and alongside Whoopi Goldberg and her film Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit. When the money she earned from her acting jobs, she helped finance her group and renamed it the Fugees in 1993. It was eventually signed to a division of Columbia Records, but its debut album, Blunted on Reality, in 1994, attracted less than spectacular reviews. Critics commented that Hill overshadowed her partners and that she should strike out on her own. The group's second album, The Score, in 1996, which featured an impressive remake of Roberta's Flack's 1973 hit, Killing Me Softly, with his song, was much better received, selling more than 18 million copies and earning 2 Grammy Awards. Hill, who had been pursuing a degree in history at Columbia University, abandoned her studies, and the group's members decided to pursue their individual interests. In 1996, Hill established the Refugee Project, an organization designed to aid underprivileged youth. In the following year, she and Rohan Marley, Bob Marley's son, had their first child. In early 1998, she began putting together a solo album, flying to Jamaica to record the work at the Bob Marley's Museum studio. The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill was released that August, fueled by the success of the single doo-wop, That Thing. The album went multi-platinum in several countries, and in 1999, Hill was nominated for 10 Grammy Awards. She won 5, including those for Best New Artist and Album of the Year. Hill's sound, often categorized as neo-soul, bridged hip-hop and mainstream popular music. The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill was also notable for its deeply personal lyrics, which address such themes as the meaning of self, family, and community. She followed her debut solo recording with a 2-disc live album, Parents, on MTV's Unplugged series in 2002. The album, which featured an unpolished performance by Hill on acoustic guitar, was punctuated throughout with her extended, tear-filled meditations on the burdens of celebrity. Although MTV Unplugged number 2 sold poorly, Hill proved that she could still be a significant draw when she headlined the Smokin' Groove's tour with Outkast later in 2002. For the rest of the decade, however, her recorded output was limited to guest appearances on others' releases and single songs on film soundtracks. And later on, you know, Hill would contribute to 6 tracks to Nina Revisited, a tribute to Nina Simone in 2015, that showcased her undeniable power and suppleness as a singer. She later recorded the song Guarding the Gates for the movie Queen and Slim in 2019. And that concludes
okay,
my
Walter.
Segment.
Yeah. Why did you choose Lauryn Hill?
You know, even though Lauryn Hill doesn't, you know, have that many really albums, I guess you could say, or songs, she has one album that is so legendary that you could just speak about her in this tone as other big artists because of how successful The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill and Killing Me Softly. Those songs were just so prominent all across the world, not just in America, but all over, how it went multi-platinum and stuff like that.
Okay. I want to thank everyone who is on the line joining us here today. And I want to give Mr. Calvin, give us a shout-out real fast.
Great show, guys. To the Quest family, keep up the great work. Great information today.
Val, shout-out real fast.
Ditto. Excellent show. Thank you for all the information you continue to bring to us each week.
Okay. Walter, close us out with the sounds of Lauryn Hill in the background. Go for it.
Back on the bully when
to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations live on 89.5 from the campus of Seton Hall in South Orange. And our motto is Quest Youth Radio is the
best youth radio.
Thank you.
We're looking for your friend, the one you let hit it and never called you again. Remember when he told you he was about to bend your man? You act like you ain't him, they give him a little trim to begin. Now you think you really gonna pretend like you wasn't down and you called him again. Plus when you give it up so easy, you ain't even fooling him. If you did it then, and you probably can. Talking out your neck, then you're...